Hey, this is Dan Hansis alongside Chris Wessling.
Hey, Dan.
Mark Sessler and the boss, Greg Rosenthal. We're the Around the NFL podcast. Check us out three times a week as we discuss the latest NFL news as it happens. Always, of course, with a touch of mirth. Subscribe at NFL.com/podcasts, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? James Coe here on the NFL Fantasy Live podcast on this beautiful Tuesday morning. Boy, I feel like part of my family's back. That's what it is. We've got the whiz kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gellhardt. We've got the beard, the magical beard of fantasy, the franchise, Matt Franciscovich. And it's my guy. It's Matt Harmon. What's up, man? How you doing?
What's going on, James? It's good to be here in the studio again. It's really cold, so there's something to complain about, which is always nice because, you know, it's good to have something to be a little miffed about in the morning.
MG, my guy Marcus Grant, not here.
He is up in the Bay Area for his mother's birthday. He took a one-day trip, flew up the coast to be with his mother for his birthday. So happy birthday, Mama Grant, and we'll welcome Marcus back to the studio next
week.
That
is so sweet.
I know.
What a nice thing to do.
What a good son.
Makes me feel like a worse son over here right now.
Would not do that.
I mean, my family's back on the other side of the country, so there's a 0.0% chance.
Yeah,
I would,
my flights back home are a little more expensive and a little longer than a quick trip up to the Bay Area.
My mom lives inland. She lives about 40 minutes away from me. I don't know if I would do that.
All right, well, then you're a jerk.
Okay.
But
All right. Big show in front of us here today. We're going to be talking about reacting to the top 50 fantasy players of 2016. That show had a nice little run this past week, right?
It was last week.
Last week, a one-week special kind of NFL Fantasy Live presents the top 50 players of 2016. We had some, I want to say a couple high-level meetings about the rankings. There were a couple arguments, as was per usual, but overall pretty good show. We're going to get to our PPR mock draft that we did yesterday for you folks who are in PPR leagues and curious about such results, but let us start with the top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to have your kids, have your wife.
All right, we'll start in New England. Tom Brady, thankfully. Thank you, Lord Jesus.
Hooray!
Tom Brady has given up his appeal. It will not be going to the Supreme Court. It never would have anyways. But
well, it would have gone there, but they would have just given it the nah wave, and that would have been the end of it.
Right. So Tom Brady, thankfully, the Deflategate saga is now over. He will be serving his suspension, as was per dished out originally so many months ago. God, it feels like forever ago that decision came down. But
it's been like, what, 500 and some days since like the AFC, the 2014 AFC championship game or something like that? I think the Around the NFL post had it. It's been an epic saga.
I lived in a different state. I'm not even sure I could legally drink when that first happened.
Oh, God.
That's not accurate.
That is fabulous. That is fabulous. Right, so the Deflategate saga is now over. We know exactly how much time Tom Brady is going to miss. What does it mean from a fantasy perspective, gentlemen?
Well, I wrote this up when the suspension first came back, and, you know, we did not know whether or not it was going to end. But, I mean, it pushes Tom Brady back to a nice late-round value in drafts, but you need to get a stopgap quarterback of some sorts.
Jimmy Garoppolo?
Four games. Rather not do Jimmy Garoppolo. Oh. You could either stream the position or pick up a couple guys. There are a few guys that you could also nab really late. As Fabiano did in our mock draft, that have a pretty good schedule to start up. Kirk Cousins, Eli Manning, and Jay Cutler all have a couple of nice games against either the NFC East, the Detroit Lions, New Orleans Saints. So they all have some nice matchups. You can mix and match from those guys. And Marcus Mariota, too, gets to play play Detroit in one of those weeks. So there's a lot of options to get if you scoop up Brady late, grab one of these other guys late, stream him off the waiver wire, and you'll be able to cover yourself for those first four games.
Where is he going, you think, in typical 10-teamers?
I think right around that 10th round range where Fabs took him.
Yep, that's where Fabs took him.
I was still a good draft price, round 10?
I'm not doing it. I did it in a couple of best ball drafts because you are already kind of inherently going to take a second quarterback because you're not doing waivers or anything.
Right.
But it stinks to burn that roster spot for 4 weeks. It's a real chore because you're going to be – I mean, you're going to be tempted to cut Brady at least twice, picking up some type of hot waiver wire guy early in the season.
Cause that's what I think.
Hard too. To carry a backup quarterback.
And right. Not to mention, just round 10 in general is such an awesome sleeper round.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like 8, 9, 10, 11. I love picking sleepers in those rounds. I don't know. For me, I get it if you want to take Tom Brady there. And, he's most likely going to be gone by round 10, but I just can't do it.
I mean, 3-4 games is a third of the fantasy regular season.
I know.
So
when he comes back, you are expecting him to go gangbusters.
Yeah, you better hope he does.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you're holding a roster spot for a quarterback for 4 weeks, you're thinking, okay, and it's really what? It's actually 5, isn't it?
Well, they have their bye week 5, I think.
Oh,
and then he comes back in week 6
in
against
week
the Browns.
Wow.
I might be mistaken. Let's check that out quick.
I don't know.
So I believe you are right about that. But yeah, and so to that point though, if
that's crazy.
What if he comes back and he's just a tick off of, what we're expecting from normal Tom Brady? Not to mention last 4 weeks of the season, 18 fantasy points, 18 fantasy points, 11 fantasy points, 5.26 fantasy points.
What if he's
that guy closer to that than when he was early in the season? I don't know. There's all the angry Brady narratives. let's not even bother addressing
get him out.
That.
Get him
he
out.
Got that out of the system last year, though.
Right. How much can one person be angry?
Right.
Eventually, you have to settle down.
Right.
So I was mistaken. Their bye week is in November, but still, that means you're without him for that week as well in the regular season because it comes early enough where you'll basically be without your starting quarterback that you're investing that 10th round pick in
for a third of the year.
It's like
the fantasy season.
There is value there. I don't see myself doing it in a ton of leagues just for that because there are so many other great quarterbacks that you can get after Brady or even around that same value. Like Carson Palmer went in that range. Fabs in our draft took Eli Manning 2 rounds later to back him up. I got Phillip Rivers there.
Yeah.
You got Derek Carr. Tyrod didn't even get drafted. Tony Romo was there. Kirk Cousins. Like,
I don't think Blake Bortles got drafted in our league.
No.
You're right.
Wow, he didn't?
He didn't.
That's
what I'm saying.
That is a shocker.
That's what I'm saying.
Rank also didn't take a quarterback. So.
Yeah, freaking Rank.
Nice. I didn't even notice that. I love that move. That's beautiful.
He wrote about it in his draft strategy, which
I'm not paying attention.
Teaser you guys can read at NFL.com/fantasy mock draft. We have the whole draft breakdown, team by team analysis. But Rank said he pointed out, he's like, I'm not gonna draft. I didn't draft a quarterback. He's like, I'd pick up one of these guys right away and stream him off the waiver wire. I guess the point is you can definitely invest in Tom Brady if you want to, but you're taking a big risk.
I feel like we buried the lead, though, because the big fantasy news yesterday, I think no doubt about it, Arian Foster signing with Miami.
Yep.
And there was a collective groan from anyone who has, either hyped or already bought shares of Jay Ajayi. We're going to see another running back by committee situation there in Miami, and it's like, how many running back committees can there possibly be in the NFL? We have another one here in Miami.
I mean, I think all of them.
There
are
could be 32. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. So I wrote up the Arian Foster post yesterday after he signed.
Yeah.
And I really think we've got to be a little bit careful with this situation. The injury thing all in of itself is one issue, but
right.
When Foster came back last year, we're used to him being a dominant fantasy back. His 119 yards from scrimmage is the highest per game figure since 2010. We're used to him being that player, but he averaged 2.6 yards per carry last year. That was by far the worst of any of those backs that Houston was trotting out. So he might not be able to be able to hold up to first and second down work anymore at this point of his career, but I think where he will be very valuable is as a receiver. Pro Football Focus credited him with 7.6 yards after the catch per catch. So, that's a pretty good indication of his ability out in space. I think he'll still be a really helpful asset there, but I don't think we can just expect him to come and usurp all of the touches and make Jay Ajayi completely irrelevant.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think anyone – here's the thing. I don't know if anyone is investing even a middle-round draft pick in Arian Foster. I just think that it absolutely plummets Jay Ajayi's value.
I don't know if it plummets, though. And I know he was in your must-own running backs piece.
He was.
I dropped him a tier in my rankings.
After the Foster news?
Yeah, I dropped him from 16 in tier 4 to 23 in tier 5.
I mean, I called him a middle-round RB1 in my must-own running backs, and now
you're kind of backing off of that.
Yeah, now I'm backing off of that. That was based on, look, like, who else do they have? They're going to make Jay Ajayi their third-down guy, too, so he's going to play all three downs. And Adam Gase came out and said something along the lines of, you know, we don't want to have a running back rotation. So I kind of based my analysis off, quote, coach speak like that, which was a mistake.
Right,
obviously.
Of course.
But, I mean, they don't have a lot of depth as it is. So they got Foster from
I don't know. Is that true? Depth? I mean, they spent a pretty good high-round draft pick on Kenyon Drake.
Right.
He hasn't really practiced yet this offseason.
Yeah.
But, you know, he fills that third down role, you would think.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, too, and I was talking about this with Franchise yesterday, is with that coach speak, maybe that is exactly what Adam Gase means, and it's not going to be, all right, Ajayi, you get two downs, Foster, you get third down.
Right.
That it's going to be, Ajayi, these are your two series, we're going to spell you, Foster, you come in for a series.
Right.
And he doesn't run as much, but he's still dangerous out of the backfield. So, I don't know. It's coach speak. It's July. but I'm with you guys. I definitely am dropping Ajayi down a tier. He went with him sitting at that like RB2 tier right in there. You were kind of hoping that he'd get some passing work, but now with Foster's arrival and Drake already there, as you mentioned, his reception and receiving work ceiling is frighteningly low. So he becomes more in the Jeremy Hill vein where he's could just be a two down guy.
Can I throw this out there though? We have been talking about all offseason, Jeremy Langford. This, that, and this other thing. Is this not the exact same situation for Jay Ajayi? They brought in C.J. Anderson. They tried to, you know, work him out. Then they actually go and work out and sign Arian Foster. All the tea leaves are there that the coaching staff maybe doesn't like Jay Ajayi. And keep in mind, this is a new coaching staff. They didn't draft Jay Ajayi, right? So, like, for me, I think all the warning signs are there. That, hey, you know what, maybe they're not very high on Ajayi, that they're going to go full-blown committee here. And that's why I'm saying, for me, we've been hammering Jeremy Langford, hammering him this offseason because of the whole committee thing. And I don't feel like we're doing that because Jay Ajayi is this huge unknown in Miami. And for me, I just think the tea leaves are there. I just don't believe in it.
I mean, I think it's all about price with any of these running backs that are going to kind of get
absolutely
by default.
Absolutely.
And thanks to Mike Clay from ESPN for essentially slaughtering Jeremy Langford's name in the streets of fantasy Twitter.
Dude, he was like that helicopter with the big bucket of water that they brought on a forest fire. Like the Langford love was starting to heat up, and he was that helicopter just dumped water all over it.
He even has in his Twitter bio, "It's not personal, Jeremy Langford." Sometimes you get associated with like really loving a player. Other times you get associated with really hating a player. But because of guys like Mike Clay, and I know you guys have talked about on the podcast all offseason, Langford's price is pretty depressed. You can start to get him in like the 7th, 8th round range in some of these drafts.
That's much better
and
than what it was.
Yeah, I'm totally fine. Like, we know he has, whether you think he stinks or not, whatever, you know he has big game potential.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Carlos Williams suspended 4 games. Jonathan Williams in Buffalo, DUI. I don't know what's going to happen there. Right now it's LeSean McCoy.
Yep.
You would think Mike Gillisley steps in and does some third down work as well.
They sent an offer sheet to Reggie Bush, did they not?
Oh, yesterday? That's right. No,
that's
right.
When you know you're desperate.
Oh, that's right.
Man. So I think all these things that have happened in this backfield have really helped Shady McCoy, though.
Yes.
Like, he was getting a ton of touches last year, and he just lost work around the goal line to Tyrod and in the red zone to Carlos
Williams.
What did
he have last year? 2 touchdowns?
2 or 3, I think.
Not good.
But with these guys out of the picture now, it's a ground-and-pound offense that Rex Ryan always employs, and with not as many stable options right behind Shady, he could see a ton of work early on and is becoming a little bit more of a value at his, like, third-round price tag so far this offseason.
It makes me love Mike Gillisley a lot more. I get that he's, you know, supposed to fill that third-down role, but look, Shady McCoy, man, has gotten a ton, I mean, just a ton of work over the last three or four seasons, and that makes me worried. He's not necessarily the most durable dude in the whole world, as we saw last year. I think Mike Gillisley's a super solid handcuff and a very interesting sleeper at that.
McCoy is closing in on 2,000 touches since 2009.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a crazy amount of work, guys. I mean, seriously. I'm looking at the Our Lads depth chart for the Buffalo Bills. It's LeSean McCoy, Mike Gillisley. They still got Jonathan Williams in there, but, you know, big question mark. James Wilder, who I really, really like out of Florida State, and they got Boom Heron there as well.
That's a good deep
dive. Boom Heron. He's lurking around.
Yeah, I think James Wilder, you're right, is a very interesting deep dive name. But, man, I don't know. Like I said, I like the explosive ability that Mike Gillisley has, for sure.
Our buddy 14-team mocker on Twitter, he writes for RotoViz.
Yep.
He actually wrote an article a couple weeks ago talking down Carlos Williams because everyone's so high on him. And
well, he came in just super overweight.
Right. This was maybe before that news came out.
Okay.
But he was talking about Mike Gillisley, and everyone talks about how efficient Carlos Williams was last year with his 9 touchdowns or whatever on
right.
limited attempts. Gillisley was actually more efficient in terms of rushing fantasy points per attempt. So.
All right.
Yeah, he had a couple long touchdown runs, which is funny because his athletic profile is kind of meh.
Yeah,
he's kind of a guy.
Oh, for sure.
And it was at the end of the year when fantasy people weren't really paying that much attention anymore and stuff like that. So
this is definitely a running back situation that we're going to have to keep a really, really close eye on at training camp.
100%. Yeah.
I think it'll be very telling to see who gets, you know, what kind of work there. And again, too, how much work is LeSean McCoy going to get, really, honestly? I wouldn't be too surprised if he gets no work at all because of the workload that we talked about coming into this season. Gosh, he's gotten so much work. That it really does concern me a bit for LeSean McCoy. And again, I think you're going to have to handcuff him with Gillisley deep in your draft. All right, we'll go to Pittsburgh. Le'Veon Bell, D'Angelo Williams are expected to – I guess, be a two-back approach there in Pittsburgh?
The thing they talked about was, I think Roethlisberger had the quote that potentially in hurry-up situations or, you know, in third-down plays and two-minute drills, they could actually have both backs out on the offense because
right.
they're dynamic and they have different skill sets with Bell, you know, basically operating as a receiver too and D'Angelo Williams being a strong back who can catch passes out of the backfield. So it doesn't seem like they're going to do this all the time, and I know Harmon was digging up some stats before the pod that kind of supports that, but it is interesting to note that they're already talking about working D'Angelo Williams in more, although granted it's with Lev Bell on the field.
Right.
But knowing his injury history, as we've discussed in the pod in the past, it might be a little cause for concern.
Le'Veon Bell, D'Angelo Williams were on the field last year for just 6 snaps.
Together.
6 snaps
yeah, like,
together.
If they even alternated their backs, it would be way out of the norm for the Pittsburgh offense.
Yeah.
In 2014, Bell played 83% of the team's snaps.
That's insane.
Guys like Jamal Charles played 64%. Marshawn Lynch, 66%. And those guys are
bell cow,
workhorse guys.
Right.
The lowest snap percentage for any Pittsburgh starting back last year was D'Angelo Williams with 85%, and either Bell or Williams went over 90% of the team snaps in 11 of 16 games. I mean, they're a primarily one-back offense. We even saw in the playoffs after both of those guys were hurt, they just pretty much shoved Fitz Toussaint into that role, you know? Like, so.
And didn't they do Ben Tate like 2 years ago as well
yes,
when
yes.
Bell went down? Same stuff.
So it's something like we have to wonder, is this just an off-season news thing? Because it's way out of what they've been doing normally. But like Elhar said, it makes a lot of sense because their star running back who the team is, he's in a contract year, right? And like
yeah.
they clearly would want to invest in a talent like this. But there's a lot of injury concerns, so it might be smart for them to do that.
I think there's that, and I just think they know that D'Angelo Williams is one of their more talented players.
Right.
Why not get him out on the field as much as possible? Look, they signed Ladarius Green, which I think is great. I think a lot of people are really excited about that. They're going to have to change their offense a little bit to really maximize the talent that they have yeah. versus the talent that they wish they had.
Yeah.
They wish they had a three wide.
Right. Martavis Bryant.
They wish
cover
they
that
had
up.
Martavis Bryant, but they don't have him. Right now, what they got is Marcus Wheaton and
DHB.
DHB.
And Sammy Coates.
Sammy Coates, yeah.
One of those two guys, either Sammy Coates or DHB, is going to be like – is going to fall backwards into like a Ted Ginn sort of season last year where they just catch a bunch of long passes.
I can't tell you how many times I've looked at Sammy Coates in like mocks or MFLs or even Scott Fishbowl, and I've just been like, can't do it.
I don't think Sammy Coates is all that good, but I also don't really care because he's a like high-end athlete on the cheap in a really good offense.
It's true.
No, that's why. Like, he didn't put great things on tape. Like, he struggled a lot last year, and I didn't even love his college tape. But But he's one of those guys, off-season narrative, has been in the facility all the time, learning, working on his craft, staying in shape, yada, yada, yada.
So here's – oh, he's an absolute Adonis. But here's the thing.
Adonis.
Yeah, that's right. he is a guy that you would think I would love because his combine numbers are out of control, but the guy can't catch the ball.
Yeah.
So there's a problem there. But I will say this, though. What we know from the Steelers offense, right, they like to basically go shotgun, spread it out, and chuck that ball.
Yep.
Can they do that with the three wide receivers they have? I don't know if they can. So here's the thing, like from an X's and O's standpoint, this is what we know, which is they like to go three wide receivers, but this is what they have. Mm. They've got a super athletic tight end that they invested in, and they've got two running backs that are really, really good.
Yeah. I mean, Ben mentioned that Bell could work as more of a receiver, so it'd be interesting to see if they employ this kind of thing, but Bell goes out to the slot.
Yeah.
Like Reggie Bush did back in like 2006 with the Saints all the time. He'd just line up wide.
And if there's like a mismatch with a linebacker or something, forget about it.
I mean, they'd have
just burn them.
They'd have to revamp their offense a bit. And so that's what is very curious to me. Are they going to actually do that to fully utilize their talents? Again, something we're going to have to watch for in training camp. I'm really interested to see what the Steelers are going to do on offense. All right, let's react to the top 50 show, shall we? You could go to NFL.com/fantasy top 50. Again, NFL.com/fantasy top 50 for analysis and a link to all the videos to all of the episodes.
So each episode of the show last week revealed 10 players.
That's right.
You know, 50 to 41, 40 to 31, so on and so forth. And after each show, I would do a little recap of the guys, why they probably made it on the list, why they were overvalued, why they were undervalued. And then for the last four episodes, we actually did Periscope, like Talking Dead style shows.
That's right.
If you've seen that with Chris Hardwick, those are all in the articles as well. And in the heart scoffing at Chris Hardwick.
I hate those Talking Bad shows. Listen, I don't want to get on a tangent here. I'm not Adam Rank, but I don't need to watch a show about a show that I just watched.
I disagree. I disagree. Let me ask you this. The great shows that you have watched, and the great movies too, the number one thing you do afterwards is you want to talk to a buddy about it.
Yes, so I'll talk to my buddy about him, not listen to some dude on TV who I don't care about. I don't want to hear his opinion about it.
But that's the genius of this show.
I understand it's a good concept. I'm just talking about me here.
You're always talking about you.
Right.
That is accurate.
All right. NFL.com/fantasy top 50. All right, let's dig right into it. Top 10, did you guys agree with it, not agree with it? What did you guys think?
I mean, we talked about this on the Periscope, but I think, and Harmon and I agreed, DeAndre Hopkins, love him. Don't think he should be in the top 10 at this point. I don't think he's a first-round pick.
I agree with that.
The volume's probably not going to be there as much. They're going to be a better team. They're not going to be as in negative game scripts. We talked about the first 8 games last year. The defense gave up like 26 points per game. He saw 14 targets a game. Second half, they gave up 13 points a game. He saw 10 targets a game, much more normal workload. Great player, still going to be a wide receiver one. Don't think he should be in the first round.
The reason I would disagree with that, I mean, obviously I like D-Hop. I love D-Hop. The talent level.
Yeah.
Is the talent level not there? I mean, he is just he's a phenomenal talent. That's why I'm like, hey, of course he's a top 10 guy because, like, you look at the talent level, he's right there.
So, I mean, obviously I think we all like Hopkins.
Yeah.
You know, Gelhar was high on him last year. I was high on him last year. I think we all were high on him last year.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's a stud-level wide receiver talent, but there's a lot of stud-level wide receiver talents at the NFL right now. I mean, and Gelhar's right. The volume concerns are real. In the first 8 weeks last season, he was a wide receiver 2 overall. From 10 to 17 in the second half, he was wide receiver 12. And I think that's like his floor. He's like Alex said, he's going to be a wide receiver 1.
Yeah.
But when they got on their winning script, they were running – much more, they were running much more run plays.
Right.
They had 3.5 rush plays per drive in the second half of the season, as opposed to 2.6 rush plays per drive in the first half of the season. So they were just much more of a run heavy, run center focused, and they did invest in a big time running back. So I think that there's just no way Hopkins is going to see 190 targets again. They don't want to be that kind of offense. He'll still be great, but I just think like there are guys like AJ Green, who's got a much better chance to own a bigger percentage of his team's offense on a team that just doesn't have the other options that Houston does.
Right. Like you said, James, he's an elite-level talent, but I want that elite-level talent in the first round married with the potential for huge locked-in volume, which is the same reason, like, we all love Allen Robinson. I'm not going to draft Allen Robinson in the first round, especially because his red zone volume could take a hit with the arrival of Chris Ivory.
Right.
Yeah, sorry, Harmon. You're not going to take A-Rob in the first round either.
I would take him at the end of the first round if I would, because he's my wide receiver 5 at the start of my second tier, but that second tier is so fat. Like, it literally goes from 5 to 11 in my rankings. Like, and you could tell me that any one of those guys from Allen Robinson, Keenan Allen, Dez Bryant, Jordy Nelson, DeAndre Hopkins, Alshon Jeffery, Mike Evans could finish his wide receiver 5, and I wouldn't buy
right.
it. But I'm not an objective on this matter, so
no.
I should probably just shut up.
Let me run down the top 10 very quickly. So Antonio Brown, Lev Bell, 1-2. Odell Beckham, 3. Julio Jones, 4. Todd Gurley, David Johnson, D-Hop, 7. Adrian Peterson, 8. Ezekiel Elliott, 9. Rob Gronkowski, 10. I believe that Adrian Peterson's value, we're seeing, I think, wide variance. Because I think in common drafts, I think we're seeing him go a lot earlier. But I think there's age concerns there as well. Plus, for me, I just think the offense isn't dynamic enough to fully utilize that. I think Jerick McKinnon's going to step forward, but whatever. If I get Adrian Peterson at 8-9, I'm through the moon.
Yeah.
I think I'd be super happy with Adrian Peterson at 8 or 9, which is what I've been seeing in a lot of 10-team drafts, is that good running back talent is falling to you, man, at 8 or 9. And that's kind of the strategy. And I know, Wiz, you're all on board with this, that if you can get that supreme running back talent, go for it. Because if you zig when they zag, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can actually build a pretty darn good team.
100%. And actually, spoiler alert, that's exactly what Franchise did, even in our PPR mock draft, which we're going to talk about in just a moment here. And I think he had my favorite team in the draft.
There you go.
But the other one I think is interesting is a lot of people, especially on Twitter and stuff, were reacting, and people are scared of the unknown commodity of Ezekiel Elliott being a rookie and being a top 10 pick.
Right.
But even in a worst case scenario, he's still going to see probably around 270, 280 touches in that offense. Because even in 2013, before DeMarco Murray's huge breakout, when he was a little bit hurt and they rotated in like Joseph Randall and I think Tashard Choice might have still been there, Murray saw around 270 touches. And then last year with McFadden, when they were splitting carries with Randall early and then he took over, he still saw like 270 touches. And that is an elite NFL running back workload. That 274 touches would rank in the top 10 last year. So Elliott, even if they rotate in Morris and even if they, you know, try to ease him in a little bit, is still going to see a ton of work. And for a guy of his talent level, you can't shy away from that volume,
I don't think,
in the first round.
Even if you don't believe in the ceiling of Elliott, the floor is so appealing,
right?
Just because you mentioned the volume. And I mean, everybody's favorite punching bag for you don't know how to train, like you can't guarantee anything coming from the college to pro level, is Trent Richardson at the running back position. And even as a rookie, when he was still not very good, he was the running back 7 in PPR and the running back 9 in standard. And I think that's that floor for Ellington. He's not going to drop below that.
Elliott.
Sorry, Bruce Ellington on the mind.
Always.
Always.
All right. Most overranked player in your mind, Wiz?
Oh, in the whole list? Wow, throwing it out at me. I mean, probably, let me flip back to one of the other things. I think we had, for one, we had Tyler Eifert too high because this list was compiled before his injury news came out.
Right.
And then I also think we have Thomas Rawls too high. We have him at 23 overall.
Oh, yeah.
This was also still before, because everybody was a lot more optimistic about Rawls before, like, more information came out, because everybody was like, well, maybe he'll be great. It could work out. But I think Rawls definitely needs to fall for us. 23 overall is way too high.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. I think he could even drop into the 40s. I think I'd be more comfortable with him in that fifth round range, right?
Yeah.
Pretty sure Fabs got him in the 6th round in our PPR mock.
He did.
So. And that's the funny thing, you know, because he got injured so late in the season, and Fabs was so gung-ho on him. And I was like, bro, He broke an ankle.
There was like ligament damage and
it's not a sprain. It wasn't a high ankle. He broke an ankle.
It was really bad.
That is not good. So I wasn't too high on him going in. But, Frances, what do you think? Most overranked or maybe even most underranked player?
I was going to say Rawls. In terms of, for my overranked at least, in terms of underranked.
Okay.
Maybe I feel like people are down on Doug Martin this year, and I understand that, you know, Charles Sims is going to be worked in.
People are so scared of Doug Martin, are they not?
Yeah, they are, and everyone's like, oh, well, he's injury prone. Am I getting the 500-yard Doug Martin or the 1,400-yard Doug Martin? And like, he was injured. That's why he had 500 yards. All these running backs have injury risk. There's not one of them without injury risk. Anyone can get injured. That's why it's such a fragile position, and there's a zero running back strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Doug Martin. I like Doug Martin over Devonta Freeman.
Doug Martin in our fantasy 17th. Top 50 was ranked 17, ahead of Jordy Nelson, Alshon Jeffery, and Sammy Watkins.
So that puts him like middle second round. I'd probably put him like early second round.
Would you take Jordy Nelson, Alshon Jeffery, Sammy Watkins before Doug Martin? I think what we're seeing in drafts is pretty much everybody's taking those three guys ahead of Doug Martin.
Well, he fell in our PPR mock because of the presence of Charles Sims.
Right.
But I think in the standard mock, it was a toss-up with those guys at the middle to end of the second round, which is kind of how I feel. Depends on what I get in the first and
fourth.
How I'm feeling it that day.
All right. Worst exclusion from the list.
Completely not on the list.
Completely not. Just outside of the fantasy top 50.
Huh? Can I say my most underranked
Please.
Player first?
Or overranked, too.
My most underranked is Keenan Allen. He's behind 35 overall. He's behind Demaryius Thomas, Amari Cooper.
35 overall is too low.
Oh, yeah.
Brandon Cooks, Mike Evans, Brandon Marshall, Sammy Watkins, and then there's a lot more after that. But I think you can start
get the
debating.
Point.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Keenan Allen is one of the surest bets of the season to me. I think he's going to finish in the top six among wide receivers. He was on pace for that last year. A Chargers offense is going to throw the ball a lot, and he's going to own the large majority share of the targets. And he's just a great player. He just thumps teams with those short to intermediate crossing routes.
Right.
That just fits perfectly with Phillip Rivers' skill set. I think we started to all see it all come together last year. And I know people bring up injuries with Allen,
right.
Which I kind of get, but at the same time, the injury that ended his season last year
was a freak.
Like it was like, total like a kidney injury.
Right.
Lacerated kidney, yeah.
Which you don't get from normally playing football. Like it just, it's something that I think you can write off with Allen. I really, really like Keenan Allen this year. I think he's painfully underranked.
I would agree with you. I think the reason he doesn't get the hype, though, is because he's not a tremendous athlete.
Yeah, he's not, but I think he's kind of the premier example to me. There are a lot of other guys like Michael Crabtree, Willie Snead, other players that I really like that are more of that craftsman at the position that mitigate their limited athleticism. But I think Keenan Allen's like the top-tier example.
He and
DeAndre Hopkins are actually pretty as athletes.
I would say he is a – I know I'm going to get killed for this. He's a better version of Julian Edelman.
No, you shouldn't get killed for that. That's not.
Yeah,
that's
like, you know how Patriots fans are.
I know, but that's ridiculous. If you can't tell the difference between Julian Edelman and Keenan Allen as a player, then I'm just not very good at watching football.
I would say they have a similar skill set, and for me, I think Keenan Allen's just a Julian Edelman 2.0. Can you imagine Keenan Allen in that Patriots offense?
120 catches.
He would kill.
Yeah.
Which he was on pace for last year. He's on pace for 134 last year.
Pretty ridiculous.
They don't have like that big wide receiver there in New England.
And they don't really utilize that. They use that, that very traditional West Coast offense, short passing attack, but whatever. We're getting off track.
So, yeah, exclusion from the list. I said this on our Periscope. The two of the worst ones for me are Michael Floyd or John Brown. Those guys need to have at least come in that back 10 players.
Okay.
They both had tremendous seasons last year when all three of the Cardinals wide receivers were healthy. They were the two most heavily involved. They're dynamic. They're young. I think Floyd's playing for a contract. I would have been happy if either one of them was on this list because they play in an elite offense, they have an elite quarterback, and I'm trying to draft one or both of them on as many fantasy teams as possible this year.
Yeah.
Your back 10, this is reverse order, Tyler Eifert, T.Y. Hilton, Emmanuel Sanders, 48, Greg Olsen, 47. Doug Baldwin, Jay Ajayi, Jordan Reed, 44, who is my most overranked player. Kelvin Benjamin, Latavius Murray at 42, and Ryan Matthews at 41.
You know, I think guys that got left off, John Brown and Michael Floyd are good mentions. You know, I shall speak no ill of John Brown ever. And I think two other guys that are kind of that potential 1A, 1B types on their own team, Randall Cobb and Dante Moncrief, I think could have pushed for the top 50, especially over guys like Kelvin Benjamin and Emmanuel Sanders. I think that I would have both of those guys well ahead, especially Cobb, man. I think there's almost no way he doesn't get back into the top 15 of wide receivers. And, you know, maybe that's being aggressive, but top 20 for sure.
I would agree with that.
I think Eric Decker should be up there, too. He had 12 touchdowns last year. He was a touchdown machine.
He did. I think the quarterback question mark, though, is a little scary. So I think that's what's scaring people off of the Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall. Maybe Brandon Marshall's my most overranked guy. He's going to see a huge regression this year, regardless of whether or not Fitz comes back or not, which is, by the way, not looking great as we stand today. All right, PPR mock draft analysis.
Real quick before we get into this, I also wanted to throw out, 'cause I forgot to do it off the top. We're going to bring back our fan league. It's okay. If you guys remember this last year, Marcus and I held a fan league. We had people submit why they should be in it on Twitter to get in the league. It was very fun. Marcus embarrassed us and did not make the playoffs. I was in the playoffs, but lost out in there. However, we're going to bring it back this year. We're going to bring back multiple leagues. Marcus and I will do our league again, and Harmon and Franchise will lead a bearded league. Not have to have a beard.
It would be preferred if you did, though.
Yeah, you don't have to have a beard to partake in it.
Hold on. I think you do have to have a beard.
No, we don't want to exclude
people. Exclude an entire gender. That would be not cool.
So, no. I mean,
if you're a bearded, you know, lady, then...
That's fine. But how about this? Can you at least... Take if you are going to be a woman in this league, can you at least like put on one of those fake beards?
That could be acceptable. Maybe,
that would help.
Maybe all of the profile pictures on NFL.com league need to have a beard in it somehow.
What it is.
But anyways, to be included in either of these fan leagues, we're going to open it up right now. You have to like rate and comment on the podcast on iTunes. We're still trying to get more people to do that. We want to know your feedback. What do you like? What you don't like? If you don't like the beards, maybe they'll shave them. They won't.
No, they won't.
Anyways, we're going to do two fan leagues. It'll be two 12-team leagues. You'll have two of us from the podcast, Marcus and me in one, Franchise and Harmon in the other. You guys can play against us all season. It'll be fun. Start rating and commenting the podcast on iTunes. We'll read some of the best ones that
being
get included
helps.
Into the leagues. Being funny, being clever, callbacks on the pod are great as well. So throw those out there. We'll start reading the best ones and filling up these leagues in the next month or so. And we'll probably draft during Fantasy Draft Week, which is going to start, I think, August 22nd. We'll have a lot of fun stuff then.
A profile pic of a beard is going to help you considerably get into the bearded league.
All right, so anyways, don't want to bear the lead, as you were saying. PPR mock draft analysis, you can read all about it, NFL.com/fantasy mock draft. We had 10 teams, full PPR mock draft.
Right.
What are your guys' overall takeaways?
First of all, can I say this? I cannot stand PPR leagues that don't give full touchdown points to quarterbacks.
Why?
Because it devalues the quarterback position so much that it's almost pointless to draft a quarterback.
But here's the problem with all of these, and this is we're going to not get on a tangent on this, but the problem with all of these scoring settings and overemphasizing them is that PPR does not change things that much within the wide receiver position. Rich Rebar wrote a great article on this on RotoViz. The only thing that PPR really changes is the value within the running back position. Those pass-catching running backs and, therefore, workhorse running backs.
Yeah, I agree.
Get a huge bump in PPR. It doesn't change things so much within the wide receiver position outside of real big outliers. Like Kendall Wright was the subject of that article back in 2013 when he caught
catches.
Like 90-something catches.
Ridiculous.
And scored two touchdowns. That hardly ever happens, but there are guys in the league that do that. And same with 6 point per touchdowns. They don't necessarily inflate the quarterbacks that much because everybody gets the bump. But I understand what you're saying. Like it gets a little complicated, but I'm only saying that just to...
But the quarterback's value relative to a wide receiver and running back is depressed.
I would argue, though, that the only way you're ever going to fix that, because there are just so many usable quarterbacks. I mean, you can get down to the 23rd spot in your quarterback rankings, and maybe there's a guy like Matt Stafford, and you're like, you know, I can talk myself into Matt Stafford as my starting fantasy quarterback. The only way you're ever going to equalize the quarterback position again is to have super flex, like be able to flex quarterbacks.
I hear what you're saying. We are totally getting on tangent.
Yeah, and I tried not to.
But the 6 points per touchdown for a quarterback, it values scoring touchdowns like they do for other positions. Right now where it is with 4 points and a full PPR, it's all about yardage and catches.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to.
It's hard to find the perfect marriage.
I agree.
Because I think that it makes the wide receiver position more valuable, and it's the most valuable position in fantasy football right now because there's the most of them, and it's also my hashtag brand.
All right, so there you go. NFL.com/fantasy mock draft to see a full mock-up, a full write-up of the mock that we did.
By the way, you can sign up to play and mock draft at NFL.com/fantasy right now as well. I stole your segue there, James,
but
I felt it. So
good.
Harmon, since it is your brand, do you have any tips for those embarking on their first PPR draft? Since some people, you know, we have a lot of casual players on the site that might listen to the pod, might stick to standard leagues. What are some tips for starting out?
I think outside of Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson, I don't think you can even really justify a running back in the first round of a PPR league, because those are really the only two guys that I have on my first tier of running backs, because they're the only ones that catch a boatload of passes
right.
In theory. They're the only ones that have that weekly ceiling. And it's hard to say no to that weekly ceiling of an elite wide receiver one. You know, there's guys like obviously Brown, Beckham, and Jones, but even if AJ Green hits this year like I expect, if Dez Bryant turns back into a red zone monster. You run into an Allen Robinson or a Keenan Allen. It's hard to say no to wide receivers early in a PPR league because of that boost, not
to the
within
ceiling.
The position, but the ceiling
right.
of the position.
Because a 10-catch, 120-yard, 2-touchdown game is, ridiculous.
And there are very few receivers, as much as, and I know, Alex, you and I have talked about this all offseason, whether at bars or not, about just the depth of the receiver position and how that middle class is so strong right now.
Right.
It's hard to not at least have one bite at the elite wide receiver apple, and I prefer to take two early in a PPR league, especially. You cannot have... I know that like robust running back and Alex, you were just talking about this, is a fancy new like kind of strategy to zig where everybody zags. But in
right.
a PPR league especially, you got to have a wide receiver in that flex spot because of the weekly ceiling and just the floor.
And the safe floor too.
Yeah.
I mean, even a 5-catch, 50-yard game is a really, really good floor for your flex position, something that you may not get.
Like just looking at the just a total off the wall example right now, like in round 9, Rank went Torrey Smith, Gelhar went Marvin Jones, I went Sterling Shepard, you went Kenneth Dixon either before or after that, depending on the turn.
Absolutely hated my draft.
But whatever. But my point is, like, if you're theoretically flexing that wide receiver there, you're gonna be much happier with the floor and ceiling of those three wide receivers than Kenneth Dixon or even Chris Ivory, who Marcus took in the same
right.
round.
One thing I think is interesting too, that I was noting in this draft as well, is that while receptions boost a lot of other those pass catching backs, they don't exactly bury the other like workhorses that don't catch a ton of passes either. Guys like Jonathan Stewart and Frank Gore actually had really good seasons last year in PPR among running backs. I think Jay Stew was the RB24 and Frank Gore was the RB12 in PPR because they have such secure workloads and they get goal line work and they can score touchdowns. So while this format does boost a guy like Theo Riddick, who I think was the RB18 last year.
Because what did he have? Like
80 catches.
80 catches?
Absurd.
You know, just bananas.
That's hard to bank on him getting again, but Jay Stewart, Frank Gore pushing for 1,000 yards and 7 or 8 touchdowns. Like that's if you're looking for an RB2 late, like I drafted both of them in our PPR mock, I think, and I got them in rounds 8 and 10, respectively.
Yeah, because their workloads are more guaranteed than a guy like Theo Riddick, who you don't know.
Who kind of needs game script to float his value.
And he got a lot of good game script with the Lions being horrible for the first half of last season.
Going back to that first round, I took Todd Gurley with the 8th overall pick. Harmon, I want to get your thoughts there. Is Todd Gurley also in that Lev Bell, David Johnson class, or just a touch below?
You know, I think he is a touch below. I actually have him in my second tier behind guys like Elliott and Lamar Miller. because I think their reception volume is more guaranteed for sure. And, you know, the tough part about Todd Gurley is he's an all-world talent, no doubt about it. But it's the same thing with, like, Adrian Peterson. You know, if he plays in a low-volume offense that isn't going to score a lot of touchdowns because of their just overall team philosophy. And just like Peterson, he's not a dominant pass catcher, or at least – I don't know if the Rams want to use him as one. Like, they only targeted him 26 times, and he caught 21 of those targets, which is a great catch rate. I think he can catch passes, but they've got that weird infatuation with Benny Cunningham. You know, they used him a lot on third downs.
Yep.
And maybe that's wise to preserve Todd Gurley long term, but I just think he's a touch below those top two.
In PPR formats, for sure.
And in standard, too. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I'd take Todd Gurley in the first round of a standard league either.
Really?
What?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think he has the weekly ceiling that I'm – or I don't think he has the weekly, like, floor and ceiling marriage that I'm looking for from a first-round pick. There are definitely ways that I can talk myself into Todd Gurley being, like, the RB12 as opposed to the RB1, you know? And I think that guys, like, again, Bell, we know that there are a lot of concerns, but, you know, and David Johnson, too, like, I think their floor is just much more secure from a week-to-week perspective, maybe not even a season-long perspective. Like, there were plenty of weeks where Todd Gurley was disappointing last year. There was even a long stretch where we were like, man, can we start this guy? And it's not because he's not good. It's because he plays on an awful Rams offense.
The Rams offense is bad, yeah.
Good point. Wiz, any takeaways, thoughts on your team, stuff like that?
I was thrilled with the way my team shook out. I jumped on A.J. Green at fifth overall after franchise took Lev Bell. And then, as Harmon said, I was waiting that entire second round. I was like, please fall to me, Lamar Miller. Please fall to me, Lamar Miller. Please fall to me. And he did. Because Lamar Miller's a guy that the last couple years has averaged around 55 targets a year. Bill O'Brien loves to feature his main back. We saw it with Arian Foster, even with Alfred Blue, and at times like Chris Polk and Jonathan Grimes. So I'm all in on Lamar Miller and that offense, and I think he could have even gone a lot higher in this PPR mock draft.
Definitely.
So
I'm surprised he didn't.
People overreacted to wanting that wide receiver depth early.
In a PPR format, I'm actually surprised Adrian Peterson went before Lamar Miller.
Yeah,
it's a little surprising.
That would that to me was a big surprise.
Should we talk best and worst teams quick here? Or
yeah, sure.
Favorite and least favorite,
please.
Franchise, you want to get us started here?
Favorite team. I kind of like the way Money's team shaped up. He went and got Danny Woodhead in the fifth round. Like, did we just forget about him?
No, I think
he's
still there.
That's a fair price. Round five is a good price for Danny Woodhead. We're not exactly sure. He had a pretty devastating injury too, man.
No, that was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, like, you know, in terms of having an injury history is what I'm saying.
So yeah. Woodhead's his RB2. He went and got Rodgers in the fourth round, which is kind of a reach, but whatever, if you like a quarterback early.
Money always takes a quarterback early.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I just kind of like the way his early rounds shaped up.
All right.
Yeah.
Harmon?
I mean, other than my own, because it's awesome. I really liked Gelhar's team.
Yeah.
He took a lot of receivers that I really like this year. He took A.J. Green in the first round, which I'm a fan of.
Tyler Lockett.
Obviously, he took God, nothing was more frustrating, because if you watch the Periscope, you know I came in late because my alarm didn't go off. And it was frustrating sitting at home watching Tyler Lockett and Charles Sims go one pick before me. And I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I took Tyler Lockett, took Charles Sims, and then Harmon had to panic and drafted Tyler Eifert in round seven.
Which, whatever. I'm okay with that. I don't care.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
But you got guys, I mean, you've got T.Y. Hilton and Demaryius Thomas. I like both where you took those guys, especially Thomas at wide receiver 17 in PPR. I think he's still going to have a pretty safe catch floor. Obviously, Tyler Lockett. And Marvin Jones in the ninth round, that's a swish.
Oh, man.
At wide receiver 41 price. Yeah. And Golden Tate did not go so high in this round.
For the record, those wide receiver things on this mock are not 100% accurate, because I just re-pieced this together. I didn't have time yesterday to go back through it. So Thomas was actually the wide receiver 14, but Jones is in that wide receiver 40 range.
Yeah, well, you took him, like I said, you took him in the ninth round, and Golden Tate, for some reason, slipped to me in the sixth round of this league, but normally he goes in like the third or fourth round of PPR leagues, and like the price difference between Tate and Jones right now is
absurd.
It's crazy. Yeah. And you even took some nice late flyers, like Vincent Jackson in the 13th round.
That's crazy,
yeah,
right?
I can't believe he lasted that long. Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me if he had another usable season, and I'm not the biggest Devin Funchess fan, but if you're taking him in the 15th round like you did here, or the 14th round like I did in our last mock, that's totally cool.
Yeah. I was very happy with my team shook out, and I like yours, Harmon, too. But I want to talk about franchises because he had a different strategy, and I think it still really played out into a solid team for him. Because
yeah, I like what he did.
As we mentioned off the top,
I really
he
like
went,
what he did,
which is weird in a PPR draft. He went running back, running back, running back. He went Lev Bell, Jamal Charles in the second, and then Eddie Lacy in the third. But why I like that so much is because those are all three guys that have an elite workload, and each of them wouldn't surprise me if they had over 50 catches this year. Yep. Like Eddie Lacy really improved that part of his game before he got out of shape and injured last year. Jamal Charles, we know, just gets pummeled with touches in Kansas City. And as we mentioned, Lev Bell's one of the best dual threats in the NFL. And then speaking to that depth of the second wide receiver tier, Harmon, like we mentioned earlier, he got Doug Baldwin, Michael Floyd, Kelvin Benjamin, and DeSean Jackson over the course of the next six rounds, even nabbing a few more running backs in there. So like he might have to mix and match his wide receivers, but he's got four guys that will put up usable weeks for him, and all could have, you know, Doug Baldwin was a wide receiver one last year, Michael Floyd was just outside the wide receiver two. All of them have good ceilings, so I really like the way your team shook out franchise and getting Ladarius Green late as well.
I'd probably be flexing a running back there, even though it's a PPR league, but I'm cool with that because all these running backs are elite. And then,
well, I don't know. I think you could flex DeSean Jackson in this lineup.
Well, maybe like depending on the matchup or whatever.
Yeah,
because on a week to week,
like that's a great receiver core from 1 to 4. Like, any of those guys can score within the top 10 receivers on a week-to-week basis. And fantasy football is a weekly game more so than it's a season-long game.
Yeah.
I think the thing with these first three-round running back teams or robust running back, whatever you want to call it, they have, like, the highest upside of teams. I know Evan Silva was talking about this on a podcast I was listening to yesterday. Like, those teams, if they hit, if all those running backs are healthy and they hit their ceiling, like, you're going to slaughter this league.
Yeah.
Of course, the trouble with running backs is they're the most fragile.
I mean, like as you say, we're looking at it like, man, you see the ceiling for Bell, Charles, and Lacy, but they were hurt, and fat last year. Right. So,
but I got some security with D'Angelo Williams in the 12th round to handcuff Bell. So, yeah.
And you've got Melvin Gordon, big bounce back candidate. Your guy C.J. Procise, who at least is the pass catching guy there, and you got Derrick Henry in the 13th round. So,
it's a good team.
It's a solid team.
I like it.
Co, I know you hated your team.
Oh, my God, I hated my team.
But walk us through, my God, what other team did you like, if it wasn't one of the ones we already mentioned?
No. You guys all hit it in terms of the teams that I liked. I just absolutely hated my draft because, I mean, look, what did I take? I took Carlos Hyde in the 5th round. You know what happened? Harmon took Dante Moncrief one pick in front of me, and I freaked out. And I completely and utterly freaked out, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And then I still must have been reeling from that, because in round 6, I did what I never do. I ain't taking mid-round quarterbacks.
Yep.
I like Russell Wilson this year, don't get me wrong, but in this format, and really even in standard leagues, I just don't like taking a mid-round quarterback. And I took Russell Wilson in round 6, and I absolutely regretted it. I missed out on all the guys that I'm really high on. Right, so I missed out on Dante Moncrief. I missed out on Jeremy Langford. I missed out on Marvin Jones, Tyler Lockett. So I always feel like a draft for me is a failure if I don't get one of my guys.
Yeah.
And especially when you're picking in the 8-hole, man. Like,
it's tough.
You got to, you know, on those turnaround picks, you got to just go and take your guy because, you know, there's going to be so many picks between you pick when you pick again. So I know I'm going to be reaching for a Marvin Jones or whatever it might be, or maybe even a Tyler Lockett. But who cares?
Yeah.
You got to do it sometimes. And for me, like, I look at Carlos Hyde and I'm like, what am I thinking here?
Yeah.
What am I doing?
When you make that pick that right after you're like, why the hell did I do
that? Looking at this also, I don't think there's any teams that I think are just awful, but there a lot of these other teams I think are question marks. And one thing I wanted to point out, because we were talking about it earlier with the Tom Brady news off the top. So Fabiano, as we mentioned, was the one that took Tom Brady, and then he backed him up with Eli Manning. But if you look at Fab's roster, his starting setup is solid. He's got Antonio Brown, Mark Ingram, Alshon Jeffrey.
So funny when you look at his team. It's wide receiver, running back, wide receiver, running back, wide receiver.
It is.
Wide receiver, running back.
But presumably he's going to start Antonio Brown, Alshon Jeffrey, and Eric Decker, and then Ingram and Deion Lewis is starting running backs. Thomas Rawls is there, might not catch a pass. Jeremy Hill is not going to get a lot of passing game work either in a PPR league. But then because he had to back up Eli Manning, as we were talking about, that's another roster spot that he's just burning for 4 weeks with, you know, with no ability really or flexibility to pick up another running back.
Right.
And he drafted two tight ends.
Hate taking two tight ends. I think Fab's team is like the classic example of like a fourth place team. Like, it's going to get to the playoffs because he's got, I mean.
Good starters. Like, Barnage is a starting tight end, too, but.
I love the starters. And, like, obviously, you know, the draft is only one part of playing fantasy. Like, you got to be smart with trades. You got to be smart with the waiver wire. But to me, I don't really see a great ceiling, especially like round seven, Emmanuel Sanders. Like, that's fine to take him. But when your early picks were so chalky that it makes it, I would rather swing for, take a bit of a swing at defenses there.
See, I think the way that Fabiano plays, he's the most active dude in all of his leagues. Right.
So he's, like, Tuesday mornings, he is up and on those waiver wires.
Oh, my God. He is so crazy on top of the waiver. So, like a madman. I think he plays in seven leagues. And I would argue that in six of those seven leagues, he is the most active player.
Yeah.
In those leagues. And so I think he falls into that. Right. So, like, he knows I'm going to be able to work the waiver wire like a madman. In the league that he plays in NFL Fantasy Live, it's not quite that way because he's playing with, you know, five or six other guys who maybe aren't taking the league that seriously, but at least know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think there's like wisdom and folly in that, being knowing that you're the most active guy and like taking too much of an emphasis in that because we don't know everything, you know. In fact, we don't know a hell of a lot of it. and like I always hate when people like take players in the draft with the idea of like, oh, I'm gonna flip them later for somebody else.
Right.
Like, that's like you're assuming not only that the player is gonna do what you expect,
right,
you're also assuming that you're smarter than your league mates. Never a good thing. Like, I remember last year when people were like, oh, I'll take Trey Mason early and then I'll take Todd Gurley and I'll just trade Trey Mason like to some idiot in my league. And I'm like, who's so stupid in your league that they don't know that Trey Mason's gonna lose his job to a guy?
Yeah. The best example of that was actually in the Fantasy Live league last year. Akbar, I think in back-to-back picks, took like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and in the draft we're like, Akbar, what the hell are you doing? He's like, oh, I'll trade him.
Oh, you can't trade a quarterback for any
year. Akbar would be walking league through the newsroom like, why didn't you accept my trade? Like, Akbar, I don't want Peyton Manning.
Yeah. Listen, Akbar, just because you're bigger right, than me doesn't mean
he kept getting so mad. He would float everybody in the league trade offers, and everybody's like, I don't want Peyton Manning.
And it was funny too because he unnecessarily held on to Peyton for
so
much longer.
Because he kept trying to trade him.
Because he was trying to flip him because he came into the draft saying that.
Right. Yeah. And everybody was like, I mean, there were so many other good quarterbacks, but nobody had a need to take a, you know, a kind of a busted up Peyton.
So
even if Peyton Manning had been solid, like, I wasn't going to trade for him. I had fine quarterbacks in that league. It was so you're right. It's a fallacy to go into a draft taking somebody like, I'm going to trade him.
It's a good psychological thing to, I mean, because there's just so much psychology that goes into fantasy football. It's really revealing about what kind of person you are. But like that thing that you do too of like, I took this guy in the third round. I got to hang on to him. I got to hang on. I got to trade him. When it's like, yeah, just cut Manning.
Amir Abdullah last year.
Oh yeah. Like, you know, you invest so much into the player you get, especially when it's a guy that you really like and you
right,
hype. It's a sleeper that's just not working out. It's like, God, when do you got to know when to let go, and that's a really hard thing to do.
I think there's also the thing too, right, where like you are so scared of getting burned by that dude later.
Oh yeah.
And
oh yeah.
That has definitely happened.
Yeah.
Where you're like, ah, screw it. You know what? I'm not going to fall into my own psychology. I'm cutting this guy.
Yeah.
And then in weeks 10, 11, 12, you're like, oh, God.
It's hard to know when to let it go.
That happened to me with David Johnson in my league of record last year.
I must
have cut him like the week before Chris Johnson went down or something. Yeah. And like, I needed a running back so bad. And the guy who scooped him, I'm pretty sure, made it to the championship. And I was just like, I held on to you for 9 weeks. And now I finally cut bait.
Yeah,
the fantasy is so stupid.
All right, should we hit some of the steals of the draft and then get to Daily Daps?
Oh, sure. I thought we were doing Daily Daps.
Oh, no, let's
steal of the draft. Let's do it.
Who wants to start?
I mean, I took Jeff Janis, obvious steal.
Steal.
Round 13.
Round 15. Listen, this is a serious take, though. Round 15, I took Sean Drawn. And, you know, he's very likely to be the pass-catching running back for the 49ers.
I like his clothes. I'm not sure I like him as a running back.
Well, I mean, he might not be good, but Chip Kelly, you know, that was a priority re-signing for him. The 49ers are going to stink.
Dude, are you really going to no-sell me on my Sean P. Diddy Combs joke? I mean, that's kind of not cool.
Isn't that kind of before my time?
Okay. All right.
I always default.
And James's Tuesday is ruined.
I always default to if I don't get a joke. That's probably before my time. It helps. But I do like, I'm not patting myself on the back here. I sound like a jerk.
You are.
But I think there's reasons that work out. I like Josh Doxton in the 13th round for Marcus. Like, he's slipping pretty obscenely low. And if Jackson's to get hurt again, or Reed gets hurt again, and he could be like the – I mean, if Reed gets hurt, he's going to be the primary red zone threat for that team.
Yeah, 100%. One for me that I loved, actually. Co, I know you weren't a fan of your team, but I don't know what the hell happened in this draft that Kobe Fleener fell to the 12th round in a PPR league. But that's highway robbery for you scooping him up there, considering a couple of the guys that went ahead of him. Like Delaney Walker, and I mean, I like Barnage and Green, don't get me wrong, but in a PPR league where Fleener's going to see that type of volume, getting him in the 12th is just is thievery.
That's the only part of my draft that I like. So there's that. I did like my A-Rob pick in the second round, but that's okay. But other than that, I absolutely hated my draft. So let's keep going. Franchise, Steel?
I like Marcus Wheaton in, what is this? The 11th round?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he had the turnaround pick. It's very, very difficult to draft from that position, but I thought he had some really, really nice sleepers late. Marcus Wheaton, Paul Perkins I like, Josh Doxson I like.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned before, Jerick McKinnon I think is going to step forward. So
yeah.
So I thought he did a really good job late in his draft.
He sort of, you know, he went Gronk number one like with the 10th pick and then kind of recovered it well after that, because that kind of throws you off.
I tell you what, if I end up 10th in my draft anywhere, I'm just not taking Gronk. I just can't do it. It throws your entire draft off.
I was definitely on Gronk in the first round, both of the last 2 years, but this year there's just so much depth at wide receiver, and they're, you know, taking a stab at one of those potentially elite running backs like Bell, Johnson, Elliott is too appealing to me. You know who I think is clear steal?
Who?
Round 9, Torrey Smith. Adam Rank. Steal.
It's a good choice.
I mean, we were on a podcast last night, Alex.
Is that a
just
steal?
Like,
or
oh, like, absolutely.
That's not a steal.
That's
it's
a
just,
steal.
It's,
he's,
like, good. It's the draft price for
you,
him.
Yeah. You can – no, I disagree. I think –
what, are you going to take him in round 7? That's ridiculous.
Yes, I've taken him in round 7 to several best ball leagues, and, like, I get that, like, that's a different format. But at the same time, if he's your 4th wide receiver or your 5th in this case for Rank – that's a swish, man. Like, he's going to lead that team in targets. And, again, where they're going to be bad. And Chip Kelly's X-speed receiver has been money the last couple of years with DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin. And Torrey Smith is a good player. I mean, it's just – to me, I think that that's a slam dunk pick. And it's the type of guy that when you put him in the flex in a PPR league, like, if he hits his ceiling in one of those weeks, it's going to be that throat cutter for you.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I agree. It was a really solid pick. Also, shout out to Money for getting Travis Benjamin in round 12.
I was looking at that too.
He might not have, you know, a million catches, but in the weeks when you start him in the right matchup, I know Harmon's a big fan of him. I like that more than his Michael Thomas pick the round before.
Yeah.
I think Travis Benjamin is going to thrive.
Yeah.
In San Diego. We talk about Phillip Rivers, you know, wanting to throw those underneath. He does it as body blows so that he could drop that long pass in there. And he loves throwing that long pass in San Diego. So I think there's going to be some weeks, man. Travis Benjamin's going to have a huge – he's a great best ball candidate, is he not?
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah. He's a huge bargain.
He's the type of guy, too, like when we're starting to think about daily fantasy, like in games where we expect the Chargers to get into shootouts, that's where we're really going to like a guy like Travis Benjamin.
All right, let's do Daily Daps to get out.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the Daily
Daps and Hooks. Give me daps because I be scribbling.
All right, Daily Dap time. Matthew Harmon, can you please give me a Daily Dap, sir? Are you ready? If you're not, I got some stuff.
Can you skip me?
Okay.
Why don't you start us off?
Okay, sure. Because I have a list. I'm going to Daily Dap jean jackets.
Nice.
Oh, God. How topical.
Oh, yeah.
I wore proudly a jean jacket that I just purchased this past weekend, yesterday. I walked in, there's 6 people in the Fantasy Stronghold, and I got 6 different jokes about my jean jacket.
I didn't know you just bought it. That makes it so much better.
Wow.
Oh, my God. I was so proud of it.
I like to imagine James, like, at the store trying on the jacket, and I don't care if none of this is based on reality, at the store trying on the jacket, be like, man, this is going to blow those guys away at work.
And just walking the collar.
Just walking into just getting slapped.
Oh, my God. It was so ridiculous. That was in the first 30 seconds of walking into the newsroom. Then, as I'm just walking around the NFL media campus, I would say 10 of the first 10 people I saw made jokes about my jean jacket.
Yeah, I mean, well, in your defense, you pulled it off, James. But it was just
you look good. You look good, James.
It's just such a unique wardrobe piece that people are going to comment about.
The thing is, I was going to wear it for NFL Now, and then my NFL Now appearance got canceled.
Aww.
And now I'm just there in a jean jacket.
Would have been immortalized.
Here's a way to compare it. Like Harmon, I'm sure could pull off suspenders in like that
hipster
easy. Look.
Easy.
Have done so.
And if he wore them in the office, legitimately every person that walked by the stronghold would make a comment.
That's
yeah.
right.
Oh yeah.
That's the kind of place we work.
Right.
That's the problem of like working in like basically a locker room.
Yeah.
Is like it's like in a group message with your friends. Like if you say something stupid,
you are gonna go
in with your like flame resistant suit anytime you hop into like a group message.
I will also daily dap a Twitter follower by the name of @PickinWedgies. His profile.
What?
His profile @PickinWedgies. His profile is this: I keep a second pair of shoes at work so people don't recognize me when I'm pooping.
Wow.
That is
strong. That's next level.
That is premeditated.
That is strong.
Yeah.
I like that. Daily daps to the Twitter followers who say my laugh is terrible.
Oh, boo to them.
Ah, come on.
Which is really funny to me. And finally, daily dap to the what is it that I laugh too loud? That's the problem, apparently.
I think that it just catches them off guard sometimes.
Maybe
and
that's
it, and it comes in hot on the mic. So.
Oh my God, does it ever?
Because
I get it.
It happens to a lot of people. But yours definitely comes through because I see the audio board over here spike when you laugh, and sometimes I can try to sense it. I'm like, oh, James is gonna laugh, and I pull it down a little bit. But otherwise, I just have to let it ride.
Fair enough. And then this other one from Tyler Gunther @Tyler_NFL.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
He says, if there was one host I could Little Mermaid and have his voice when I host, it's James Coe. So apparently I have a nice voice and a horrendous laugh.
Hey, you can't win them all, James.
You know what? I'll take it. Those are my daily daps.
Beautiful. Franchise.
All right, my daily daps is going to a game that I played this weekend with my family.
Okay.
It's called Pass the Pigs.
Pass the Pigs.
Yes. And basically, it's dice. You're rolling dice, but the dice aren't actual cubes of dice. They're little pig figurines.
Okay.
And they have, like, dots on them. And depending on how the pigs land, you get certain amount of points, and it's, like, first player to 100 points or whatever wins. But it's so much fun because you're rolling pigs, and the way they land, there's different names for them. Like if they land on all 4 feet, it's called a trotter. If they land like on their nose with their butt in the air, it's called a snouter.
Franchise was talking to us about this before the podcast, and Harmon was like, what the hell? And I was like, yeah, I played this game.
Yeah.
It's like an all-time cabin game.
Yeah.
Like if your family
or
somebody
has
Midwest
a... Midwest thing? What's going on?
I don't know. It's pretty old school. But it's been around for a while.
It's before my time.
It's the kind of game a family had in probably like the 70s or something,
yeah.
And then just stuck in their cabin, or like if it's
got
rented
it.
Out, it's
oh,
that
yeah.
kind of game.
But
like
got it.
Like
oh,
an old school backgammon chest or like the old school life kind of thing. It's one of those that you always find in a cabin. And it's fun.
Well, when Dad Chies and his family was crossing the Great Plains during the pioneer days, I guess they played.
That's right. We used to carve the pigs out of wood. But no, I was at a beach house in Monterey with my dad, and we were like at Target trying to find a game. We wanted like a card game or something, and
yeah.
I was like, "Oh, Pass the Pigs," and it was $10. My dad used to play it when I was a kid, and so we brought it home. It was a huge hit. Everyone loves it.
Oh my God!
There's so many jokes to be had about rolling pigs on a table. So
that is fabulous.
Oh, Pass the Pigs.
I was worried for a second that we were gonna have to edit that out. I really was. I wasn't sure where we were going. Pass the pigs. This could be dangerous.
No, it's just
I'm
dice
not sure.
made out of pigs.
And then it ended up being
family.
It's
a family game.
It's a lot of fun.
That's
clearly
cool.
That was invented in the 1800s.
Alex Killar, Wizkid from Wisconsin.
Oh, man.
It beats Pokemon Go, that's for sure.
Oh,
does
geez.
It,
You don't
though?
Need to get on that again.
Oh,
does it, though, for
I'd like to anti-daps Pokemon Go.
Again?
Okay. I'm with you, though. I pretty much quit, though.
Okay, so my daps quick. Okay. If I didn't do it last podcast, I forget the latest trade of Saga, a comic book series Marcus Grant and I are reading, came out. It was phenomenal. I can't recommend it highly enough. If you're into sci-fi or fantasy or just good storytelling, go
yeah.
find Saga at a local bookstore or comic book store. It's amazing. Daily Daps to Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. It's her show that she's doing on TBS. She was a former Daily Show correspondent. I had been meaning to watch it, forgot to DVR it, heard a lot of great things, so I was finally like, all right, I got to get on this. So I just DVR'd it, and I've watched probably 4 or 5 episodes, and she's just got a great perspective on things and a great presence, and she's really doing a kick-ass job over there. So Daily Depths to her. And yesterday was the 30th anniversary of the release of Aliens, one of my all-time favorite movies. So Daily Depths to James Cameron and all involved with that.
I love that movie.
It's such a good movie.
I love
Harmon, have you ever seen Aliens?
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Well, I'll add that one to the top
that's
of the list.
That's a no.
No, it means I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Oh, that's a no.
That movie's got so many great action movie quotes, though.
I've seen bits. No, it literally means I've seen parts of it.
Have you seen the scene where the alien comes out of the abdomen?
Yeah.
That's in the first
one.
And
I saw the better version, the parody one in Spaceballs.
Oh, yeah, that's a better version.
Yeah.
That's right. And he does a little dance.
All right, Harmon, Daily Daps, we get out of here.
Is anybody still listening to this podcast?
Probably not.
If anybody made it all the way through to my Daily Daps, please tweet me and let me know.
He needs that validation. He really
does. Well, no, I'm just actually really curious if anybody's put up with
this. You wonder where Charlie gets that constant need for validation and attention when you're asking listeners to tweet you your Daily Dap.
I don't wonder where that from, actually. No, I'm just curious, like, after all this laughing, if somebody's like, I'm done.
There's no way.
No, nobody's listening anymore. But so my Daily Dap, you know, obviously I traveled a lot this off season. We drove across the country, listened to a lot of podcasts. One of my favorite ones that I started listening to was an NPR podcast called Invisibilia. It's about the hidden forces that or maybe that's the hidden brain. Never mind. No, but it's like a psychological podcast at social sciences and everything like that. I can't remember the exact description of it, but one of the great ones was it's a more recent one that I listened to once I got back. It's called The Personality Myth. It talks about how our personalities are not set in stone and how we can change, and we view people, like, even when we get married, like, not we, but when people make that mistake, they go and they, like, kind of think, you know, my spouse is, like, going to be this person forever, but just talks about how people change and
oh yeah,
you know, criminals and things like that, you know, redemption and all these sort of things. So it's a really interesting podcast, and just something, like, if you want to listen to a show that's not about football, it's a really interesting one. And I you know, so
all right, there you go.
Nice.
That is our podcast for today. For the WizKid from Wisconsin, Matthew Harmon, and the Beard of Fantasy, Matthew Franchise, I'm James Coe. See ya.